SBS Radio.
Welcome to NITV Radio, Matthew.
Thank you, Bertrand. I'm really excited to be here again, kicking off another episode of our new famous Tell Me Law. Today, Bertrand, we're going to be speaking about what a shareholders agreement means for Indigenous business.
What does it mean?
So essentially, I'd also essentially love to kick off our program just by first giving our acknowledgement to the traditional owners of the land, the Boonwurrung and Wurundjeri, Wurrung peoples of the Kulin Nation, and their elders, present, past and future. What a shareholders agreement means is essentially the shareholders agreement is a legal contract that sets out the rights and obligations of the shareholders. And there's obligations of directors that are contained in the shareholders agreement. And the shareholders are party to the agreement. And the company whose shares are held by the shareholders is also generally a party to that agreement.
So a company is also a party to an agreement.
That's right. Because the interesting thing about a company is the law sees a company as being a person. So a lot of things like signing a contract, owning certain things, owning assets, are things that we can do as people, but so can a company. And that means, for the purposes of a shareholders agreement, a company too can be a party and sign.
So it's legally it's a person. Wow, that's good to know. And is a company a good idea for Indigenous business?
Well, that's a excellent question. And that question depends on some factors. Overall, if there's a business that's being run, a company can provide certain benefits that aren't provided through other business vehicles. So, for example, a company itself, going back to the point we were saying before about a company being a legal entity, a legal person in its own right, that means that the company can accept liability and have liability and legal obligations imposed on the company directly. The good news for directors and shareholders is their liability is limited. Generally, a shareholder's liability is limited to the shares.
Yeah.
And directors themselves are generally, as a starting point, not liable because the company has that liability. So that's definitely one of the advantages. The other point is if an Indigenous business is operated through a company, well, then it's easy for that ownership of the company business to be transferred simply by transferring shares.
Wow.
The other good news for Indigenous businesses is because, you know, our families are very large, the shareholding structure can allow for many, many shareholders. So it means in large Indigenous families, there can be a really strong separation of ownership so that the shareholders within a family or mob can come together and all own the particular company, which is a really good thing. Companies, they can trade all across Australia and most countries in the world if the company's incorporated in Australia. There's definitely some tax rates for companies. I think the tax rate for company tax is currently 30 cents in the dollar, which is much greater when compared to, you know, a sole trader business or a partnership, say, that is earning substantial amounts of income. And a company can also give access.
So who pays more, the sole trader or the company?
Excellent question. Now, the point on that is, first up, I'm not an accountant, so I'm a bit limited in what I know. I'm a lawyer in this. But what I can say is that a company has a fixed rate of 30 cents in the dollar. The individual has their scale depending on the amount of income that's earned. So you can, people listening to this program today can check with their accountant, because it depends on the amount of income received, and then there's that threshold point where earning 30 cents in the dollar at the company rate becomes much more financially sensible.
Yeah. And going back to the company and the shareholder, what are some of the common clauses that I can find in a shareholder agreement?
Yep. A shareholder's agreement will always start off with the recitals. The recital sets out what is the company about, what's the business about, and what's the agreement about. So some particular aspects of the company and its business are set out there. A shareholder's agreement will also set out who the parties are. We'll have conditions and obligations on the shareholders and directors of the company. Some of those conditions can be what's known as a condition precedent. There's confidentiality obligations. So, for example, there can be information that directors and shareholders come across that it's not in the best interest of the company to know about. So confidentiality provisions and intellectual property provisions can be there to protect the company and its intellectual property and its information that's confidential. A really good shareholders agreement will set out dispute resolution and the process that takes place. So for example, if directors in a company and shareholders can't actually agree on a particular decision, what happens? Well, the shareholders agreement can set out the process that takes place to try and resolve those decision-making processes. Payments to shareholders and directors are set out. Rights about the sale and buying and also issuing new shares, for example, to bring new shareholders on board, they can be set out and included in the shareholders agreement. Restraints are included. So for example, just say you've got, it's common to have a director that's also a shareholder. Just say you have a company.
Yeah.
You set it up with, you know, your mates and some other directors are there as well. And then one day one of those directors decides to leave the company. They resign from their position. Well, there's a lot of risk in terms of a competing business being set up. And the whole company could fail depending on the circumstances and the competitive advantage that that particular director could get. But there can be restraints set out in the shareholders agreement so that there's restraints against that director from competing and otherwise ruining the business of that particular company. There's some of the key provisions, Bertrand.
Yeah, but there's one that you mentioned that really caught my ear. It's the condition of condition precedent. What's that?
Yes, excellent point. So condition precedent is basically what has to happen before a particular legal obligation takes effect. So, for example, a really, really good example is, most people would have heard in the property, you know, buying a home, for example,
Yeah. The
subject to finance clause, right? Which means unless you get the approved finance, then the deal doesn't go ahead.
Yeah.
That clause itself is a condition precedent, meaning the satisfaction of finance, the finance has to be ticked off and then the legal obligation through the contract takes place so the deal can go ahead. That's a great example of a condition precedent. Condition precedents can really help our listeners and Indigenous business owners in any commercial deal as well. There could be, say, you know, just as another hypothetical example, just say somebody's in the importation business.
Yeah.
They could enter into a contract with somebody overseas, and in that contract could say, unless there is a certain amount of order, the contract doesn't go ahead. So condition precedents used wisely can be a very, very effective legal strategy.
It's a tool, not just a strategy. It's a tool to understand and use very, very smartly. And what are some of the rights and obligations that might apply when shares are sold under the shareholders agreement?
Yes. The best way, and what I want to start off with in answering this question, is giving thought about these points that I'm about to get into at the time of having your shareholders agreement written. So the first and starting point is the best form of rights and obligation really is a foresight and good thinking from the beginning, because with that, then you can have the particular clauses that you need in your shareholders agreement. So with that foresight, then you've got the opportunity to think about some of the best clauses to have. Now, when shares are sold under the shareholders agreement, it's common to have clauses that are about preemptive rights. So what preemptive rights are is the right to acquire another shareholder's shares if they want to sell those shares for whatever reason. And the basis of those rights themselves can be set out in the shareholders agreement to have some control over what happens to shares when they're being acquired. Another really good provision in a shareholders agreement is what's known as tag-along rights. This is where, just say you've got a minority shareholder, you and I, Bertrand, just say we own a company together,
And
you might have 70% of the shares that are in your name and maybe 30% in my name. Or these days, there's a lot of joint ventures, which we've touched on.
Yeah, the very first one, I think.
Yes.
Was it the first? Yeah.
And so in joint ventures, it's common for the Indigenous owner to have at least 51%, and then the non-Indigenous owner to have, you know, 49% or less, depending on the overall structure. But if essentially that's a good example where tag-along rights could apply, because if the Indigenous owner holds the vast majority of shares, chooses to sell their shares, there could be tag-along rights in the shareholders agreement that says that the non-Indigenous owner of shares can also tag along in that deal and have their shares sold and purchased under the same terms and price. And one more effective clause, just for giving some more value today, is the drag-along rights. And the drag-along rights is what the majority shareholder can implement so that the minority shareholder too has to sell their shares. So take that joint venture example.
Yeah.
In that instance, if there's a drag-along right clause in the shareholders agreement in that Indigenous joint venture structure, the Indigenous owner, provided they have the most of the shares, can drag along into the deal the other shareholders' shares, which can be really good if you want to sell the whole business to someone and realize great gain. Yeah.
Wow. Those are all things that we need to dig a little bit deeper and understand before engaging in any business. Now, is it common to have a termination clause in a shareholder's agreement? So what does termination of a shareholder's agreement mean?
Well, you're asking really, really good questions.
It's one wrapped into two.
you're asking great questions. I think like all... you know, great broadcasters do.
No, trying to actually.
So the termination clause is definitely one of the most important clauses in the whole agreement. In some ways, you could look at the termination clause as like the prenuptial agreement.
Okay.
You know, setting out what's going to happen if you don't want to be in this relationship
who
together anymore.
Who brings what and who takes what when?
Correct. And so the termination clause can cover a whole heap of variables, exactly as you were saying, who takes what, etc. Essentially, it sets out what's to happen and the obligations on the parties if the agreement and the company structure and shareholding arrangement is terminated. So what happens is there's a whole heap of conditions that are set out in the termination that says what things are going to happen. So an example of that is a termination clause can say that valuers might be appointed to value the company and its business to then be able to realize the profit. You then distribute the profit, sell everything down, wind the company up. There's a whole range of variables. But the most important thing, I think, in this is to understand that termination clauses exist. And, you know, business owners, if they're listening today, can go out there and get specific legal advice. But it's really good to think about how you want this whole business arrangement and company to terminate if and when that time comes.
So when you start a business, all these clauses, you have to agree on them before you even enter business.
So if you're going to set up a company, there's a lot of companies that don't have a shareholders agreement,
okay,
right?
Yeah.
The point is, though, foresight is always the best thing, in my view, when it comes to legal issues. And having a shareholders agreement in place as soon as a company is set up is sometimes the very best thing that can be done. I had a case... just over a year ago, I was in the county court in Victoria where a client of mine had a legal dispute with a partner / director. That was one of the questions in the case. And the whole case was very expensive, time consuming and stressful for my client. The thing here though, and the reason why it's relevant for what we're discussing, is my client came to me at the very beginning and said, hey, he's got this guy come on board, they want to form a company together. And what do? And the very first thing I said was, we have to write you a shareholders agreement to make sure that everything's set out, everything's clear, termination clauses are in there, et cetera, et cetera. For some reason, he felt like he didn't want to bother the other guy in getting the agreement done.
Yeah.
And that's the very thing that could have resolved the issues without even having to go to court. So the point is, having a shareholders agreement written from the very beginning is a great thing to do.
So helps out because you never know when trouble will pop up and you have to go separate ways.
Exactly. And often the process of sitting down together with other directors and shareholders and working out, hey, this is how you want your company to run, these are the obligations you want, this is how you want it to all work, that process itself can prove very, very valuable. And sometimes the shareholders agreement then gets put in the bottom drawer and not looked at again for many, many years.
Yeah.
But that mere process of having the agreement written and getting that advice from a lawyer at the beginning can be one of the cornerstones to successful business.
Yeah, I think it gives peace of mind. Well, Matthew, thank you so much. Before I let you go, any parting word or something you'd like to add to the conversation that I haven't mentioned?
Most definitely. I would love to share a quote that I read recently. So this is Dr. Tom Calmer. He was at the time the co-chair of Reconciliation Australia. And he said, here in Australia, we're fortunate enough to have one of the richest and oldest continuing cultures in the world. This is something we should all be proud of and celebrate. And I think this is very, very relevant for our Indigenous community and also fits in nicely with our topic of today, because there's a lot of Indigenous business owners out there. And I think we're fortunate to be knowledgeable as we are, and we can continue and take pride in doing what we're doing. So,
thank you so much, Matthew.
Thank you, Bedrin.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.